Chapter 9. Pitt stared at the gaunt and repulsive face that echoed his image from a small mirror, hanging in the cabin's head. The black hair dangled down his face and ears, adding an unkempt crown above the deep green eyes that were circled and etched with jagged red blood vessels. He had not slept long. His watch showed a time lapse of only 4 hours. It was the heat that woke him, the morning blanket of hot air, drifting across the sea from Africa and digging its burning fingers into his skin. He discovered the ventilator that was closed, and he opened it, but the damage was already done. The hot, dry air had a head start, and the air conditioning would never catch up and cool the cabin, at least not until early evening. He pushed the tap and splashed water over his face, letting the coolness soak into his pores as it dribbled down his back and shoulders. He briskly dried his damp skin and tried to recall in sequence what had happened the night before. Willie and the Maybach Zeppelin. The villa. Drinking with Von Till. Terry's beauty. Her paled features. Then the labyrinth, the dog, and the escape. Athena. Did her owner ever find her? The dory this morning. The yellow albatross and the explosion. Now the waiting for Gunn and his crew to salvage the plane and find the body of its mystery pilot. What was the connection with Von Till? What were the old Kraut's motives? And Terry? Did she know about the trap? Was she trying to warn him? Or did she bait him into being used and pumped for information by her uncle? He shook all thoughts and questions from his mind. The bandages itched and he fought the agonizing urge to scratch. God, it was hot. If only he had a nice cold drink. The only item of clothing the doctor hadn't cut off his body was his shorts. He rinsed them out in the basin and put them on wet. Within minutes, they were completely dry. A light knock came from the door. It slowly swung open, and the red-haired cabin boy poked his head around the bulkhead. "Are you awake, Major Pitt?" he queried softly. "Yes, but just barely," Pitt replied. I didn't mean to bother you," the boy said hesitantly. "The doc asked me to check on you every 15 minutes to make sure you were resting comfortably." Pitt threw a withering stare at the cabin boy. "Who the hell can rest comfortably in this furnace with the air conditioning turned off?" A lost, bewildered look crossed the young, sunburned face. "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, sir. I thought Commander Gunn left it on." "What's done is done," Pitt said, shrugging. "How about something cold to drink? Would you like a bottle of Fix?" Pitt's eyes narrowed sharply. "A bottle of what?" "Fix. It's a Greek beer." "All right, if you say so." Pitt couldn't help but grin. "I've heard of taking a Fix before, but never drinking one. I'll be right back, sir." The boy ducked around the bulkhead and closed the door. Suddenly it jerked open again, and the young boy's flaming hair reappeared. "I'm sorry, Major. I almost forgot. Colonel Lewis and Captain Giordino are waiting to see you. The colonel wanted to bust right in and wake you, but the doc wouldn't hear of it. He even threatened to throw the colonel off the ship if he tried it." "All right, send them in," said Pitt with impatience. "Just hurry with the beer before I evaporate." Pitt lay back on the bunk and let the sweat roll down his body onto the rumpled sheets, sopping the areas that came in contact with his skin. His mind continued to turn, ransacking every detail of the past, assembling for the present, pushing ahead and plotting future directions. Lewis and Giordino. They hadn't wasted any time in coming. If Giordino received an answer from Numa headquarters, it might help to supply one of the many missing pieces to the puzzle. The four borders were forming, but the middle was a scattered conglomeration of uncertain and unknown quantities. Von Till's evil face leered from the maze, his tight-lipped grin curling in smug disdain. Pitt's mind raced on. The great white dog. He tried to force it into another piece of the puzzle, but it wouldn't fit. That's strange, he thought. The dog doesn't correspond to the piece it's supposed to. For some unfathomable reason, he couldn't force the animal between Von Till and Kurt Hibbert. Suddenly, Lewis burst into the cabin with all the finesse of a sonic boom. His face was red and he was sweating. The tiny beads streamed down his nose and into his mustache, where they were absorbed like rain in a forest. "Well now, Major, aren't you sorry you passed up my invitation for dinner?" Pitt half smiled. I admit there was a time or two last night when I regretted turning down your scallops. He pointed to the gauze and adhesive tape crisscrossing his chest. But at least my other dinner engagement gave me a few memories that I can carry for a long, long time. Giordino stepped from behind Lewis' hulking form and waved a greeting to Pitt. See what happens every time I let you go out and carouse on your own? Pitt could see the wide grin on Giordino's face, but he also noticed a fraternal look of concern in his friend's eyes. Next time, Al, I'll send you in my place. Giordino laughed. Don't do me any favors if you're a living example of the morning after. Lewis parked his bulk heavily in a chair facing the bunk. God, it's hot in here. Don't these damn floating museums carry air conditioning? Pitt enjoyed a tinge of sadistic pleasure at Lewis' steaming discomfort. Sorry, Colonel, the unit must be overtaxed. I have a beer coming that should help make the heat a bit more endurable. Right now, Lewis snorted, I'd even settle for a glass of Ganges River water. Giordino leaned over the bunk. For Christ's sakes, Dirk, what mischief did you get yourself into after you left us last night? Gunn's radio message said something about a mad dog. I'll tell you, said Pitt. But first I need a couple of questions answered myself. He looked at Lewis. Colonel, do you know Bruno von Till?
Do I know von Till? Lewis repeated.
Only slightly. I was introduced to him once and have seen him occasionally at parties given by the local dignitaries, but that's about all. From what I gather, he's something of a mystery. Do you, by chance, know what his business is? Pitt asked hopefully. He owns a small fleet of ships. Lewis paused for a moment, closing his eyes in thought. Then they shot open, transmitting a look of sudden recollection. Minerva. Yes, that's it. Minerva Lines, the name of the fleet. I've never heard of it, Pitt murmured. Small wonder, snorted Lewis. Judging from the decrepit rust buckets I've seen smoking by Thassos, I doubt whether anyone else knows of its existence either. Pitt's eyes narrowed. Von Till's ships cruise along the Thassos coastline? Lewis nodded. Yes, one passes every week or so. They're easy to spot. They all have a big yellow M painted on the smoke funnels. Do they anchor offshore or dock at Laminas? Lewis shook his head. Neither. Every ship I've bothered to notice came from the south, circled the island, and reversed course south again. Without stopping? They lie to for perhaps half an hour, no more, right off the point by the old ruins. Pitt raised up out of the bunk. He looked questioningly at Giordino, then Lewis. That's odd. Why? Asked Lewis, lighting a cigar. Thassos is at least 500 miles north of the main Suez Canal shipping lanes, Pitt said slowly. Why should von Till send his ships on a 1,000-mile detour? I don't know, Giordino said impatiently, and frankly, I could care even less. Why not stop this verbal screwing around and tell us about your nocturnal escapades? What has this von Till character got to do with last night? Pitt stood and stretched, wincing from the stiff soreness. His mouth had a sand and gravel taste. He could not recall when his throat had been so dry before. Where was that dumb kid with the beer? Pitt caught sight of Giordino's cigarettes, and he motioned for one. He lit it and inhaled, increasing the rotten taste in his mouth. He shrugged, smiling wryly. Okay, I'll give it to you from beginning to end, but please feel free to stare at me like I'm crazy. I'll understand. In the heat-tortured cabin, the steel walls almost too hot to touch, Pitt told his story. He held nothing back, not even a thin belief that Terry had somehow betrayed him to von Till. Lewis nodded thoughtfully on occasion, but made no comment. His mind seemed to linger elsewhere, returning only when Pitt graphically described an event. Giordino paced the small cubicle unhurriedly, leaning slightly against the slow rolling of the ship. When Pitt finished, no one spoke. 10 seconds passed, 20, then 30. The atmosphere had turned humid from perspiration and rapidly became stale from cigar and cigarette smoke. I know, Pitt said a little tiredly. It sounds like a fairy tale and makes very little sense, but that's exactly the way it happened. I left nothing out. Daniel in the lion's den, Lewis said flatly, without inflection. I admit what you've told us seems far-fetched, but the facts have a strange way of bearing you out. He pulled a handkerchief from a hip pocket and dabbed it across his forehead. You were correct in predicting that the antique plane would attack this ship, and you even knew when. Von Till supplied me with a hint.
The rest was conjecture. I can't figure the weird setup, said Giordino. Using an old biplane to shoot up the sea and landscape merely to get rid of the first attempt seems overly complicated. Not really, said Pitt. It soon became obvious to Von Till that his sabotage attempts on the scientific operations of Numa's expedition were not succeeding according to plan. What crossed him up? Giordino inquired. Gunn was stubborn, Pitt grinned evenly. In spite of what he thought were accidents and setbacks due to natural causes, he refused to weigh anchor and give up. Good for him, Lewis grunted and cleared his throat to speak, but Pitt went on unruffled. Von Till had to find another direction. Using the old aircraft was a stroke of genius. If he had sent a modern jet fighter to attack Brady Field, all hell would have broken out in the form of an international crisis. The Greek government, the Russians, the Arabs, all would have become involved, and this whole island would have been teeming with military personnel on emergency alert. No, Von Till was smart. The antique albatross caused our government some embarrassment and cost the Air Force a few million dollars, but spared everyone a diplomatic mess and an armed conflict. Very interesting, Major. Lewis' voice was flat, skeptical. Very interesting, and most instructional. But would you mind answering a question that's been nagging the back of my mind? What is it, sir? It was the first time Pitt had addressed Lewis as sir, and he found it strangely distasteful. Just what are these seagoing eggheads looking for that brought this rotten business down around our heads? A fish, Pitt replied, grinning. Lewis' eyes widened, and he almost dropped his cigar on his huge lap. A what? A fish, Pitt repeated. It's nicknamed Teaser, a rare species reported to be a living fossil. Gunn assures me that landing one would be the greatest scientific achievement of the decade. Pitt supposed wryly that he was overdoing it a bit, but he was irritated by Lewis' blundering pompousness. Lewis' face was not pleasant as he rose trembling from his chair. You mean to say that I have $15 million worth of wrecked aircraft scattered over a base under my personal command, my military career all but ruined, and all because of a goddamned fish? Pitt tried his best to look serious. Yes, Colonel, I guess you might say that. A saddened look of absolute defeat gripped Lewis' features as he shook his head from side to side. My God, it's not fair, it's just not... He was interrupted by a knock on the metal door. The cabin boy entered, carrying a tray containing 3 brown bottles. Keep them coming, Pitt ordered, and keep them cold. Yes, sir, the boy mumbled. He set the tray down on the desk and hurried from the cabin. Giordino passed Lewis a beer. Here, Colonel, drink up and forget the damage to Brady. The taxpayers will absorb the cost anyway. In the meantime, I'll probably suffer a coronary, Lewis said gloomily. He sat back down in the chair, collapsing like a leaky inner tube. Pitt held up the ice-frosted bottle and rolled its cold surface across his forehead. The red and silver label was stuck on crooked. He stared idly at the reversed printing that proudly proclaimed, "By appointment to the Royal Greek Court." Where do we go from here? Giordino said between gulps. Pitt shrugged. I'm not sure yet. A lot depends on what Gunn finds in the wreckage of the Albatross. Any idea? None at the moment. Giordino mashed his cigarette into an ashtray. If nothing else, I'd say we're well ahead of the game, especially compared to this time yesterday. Thanks to you, our ghost from World War I is kaput, and we have a pretty good lead on the instigator behind the attacks. All we have to do now is have the Greek authorities pick up Von Till. Not good enough, Pitt said thoughtfully. That would be the same as a district attorney demanding the indictment of a suspect for murder who had no motive. No, there has to be a reason, not a valid one in our eyes necessarily, but still a reason for all this intrigue and destruction. Whatever the cause, it isn't treasure. Pitt stared at Giordino. I'd forgotten to ask. Did Admiral Sandecker send a reply to your message? Giordino dropped an emptied bottle in a wastebasket. It came through this morning, just before the colonel and I left Brady Field for the first attempt. He paused, gazing up at a fly walking across the ceiling. Then he belched. Well, Pitt grunted impatiently. The admiral had a crew of 10 men pour through the National Archives on a crash research program. When they were finished, they all agreed on the same conclusion. There is no recorded document anywhere that indicates shipwrecked treasure near the Thassos coastline. Cargoes? Could any of the recorded wrecked vessels have carried valuable cargo? Nothing worth mentioning. Giordino pulled a slip of paper from his breast pocket. The Admiral's secretary dictated over the radio the names of all the ships that were lost on or around Thassos in the last 200 years. The list isn't impressive. Pitt wiped the salty sting of sweat from his eyes. Let's have a sample. Giordino set the list on his knees and began reading aloud in a rapid monotone. Mistral, French frigate, sunk 1753. Clara G., British coal collier, sunk 1856. Admiral Defosse, French ironclad, sunk 1872. Scylla, Italian brig, sunk 1876. Daphne, British gunboat. Skip to 1915, Pitt interrupted. HMS Forcher, British cruiser, sunk by German shore batteries on the mainland, 1915. Von Schroeder, German destroyer, sunk by British warship, 1916. U-19, German submarine, sunk by British aircraft, 1918. No need to continue, Pitt said, yawning. Most of the lost wrecks on your list were warships. The chances are slim that one of them might have carried a king's ransom in gold. Giordino nodded. As the boys in Washington said, no recorded documents of sunken treasure. The talk over treasure brought an alert gleam in Lewis' eyes. What about ancient Greek or Roman vessels? Most records wouldn't go back that far. That's true, said Giordino. But as Dirk previously pointed out, Thassos is a long way off the beaten shipping paths. The same holds true for the trade routes of antiquity. But if there is a fortune under our feet, Lewis persisted, and Von Till found it, he'd most certainly keep it a secret. There's no law against finding sunken treasure. Giordino exhaled two streams of smoke through his nose. Why bother to hide it? Greed, said Pitt. Insane greed. Wanting 100%, refusing to share with others, or having to pay the government under which the riches were found any taxes or assessments. Considering the huge cut most governments demand, Lewis said angrily, I can't say as I'd blame Von Till for keeping the discovery a secret. The cabin boy came and went, leaving three more bottles of beer. Giordino downed his with one tilt of the head and then dropped the empty bottle beside its mate in the wastebasket. This whole game is like a bad deal, he complained. I don't like it. I don't like it either, Pitt said quietly. Every logical avenue winds up in a cul-de-sac. Even this talk about treasure is meaningless. I tried to bait Von Till into admitting he was after treasure, but the wily old bastard offered no indication of interest. He's trying to hide something, but it's not sunken gold bullion or lost diamonds. He broke off and pointed out a porthole across the sea where Thassos slept under the rising heat waves. The solution lies elsewhere, either near the island or on it, or maybe both. We'll soon know more when Gunn raises the Albatross and its occupant. Giordino, both hands clasped behind his head, leaned his chair back on two legs. By all rights, we could leave now and be back in Washington this time tomorrow. Since the mysterious renegade plane is destroyed, and we know who instigated the accidents on board the first attempt, things should settle back to normal. I see no reason why we can't pack up and head for home. He threw Lewis an indifferent look. I'm certain the Colonel can handle any further emergencies that might crop up on Brady Field. You can't leave now. Lewis was sweating heavily, his breath in gasps, barely controlling his temper. I'll contact Admiral Sandecker and have... Don't worry, Colonel, Gunn interrupted from the doorway. He had pushed the cabin door open silently and now stood leaning against the bulkhead. Major Pitt and Captain Giordino won't be leaving Thassos just yet. Pitt looked up quickly, expectantly. There was no elated expression on Gunn's face. It merely reflected a mixture of blank nothingness and dejection. It was the face of a man who ceased to care. The small bone structure showed through the shoulders, drooped from exhaustion, and the skin glistened with drops of salt water that clung to the body hair in tiny droplets. He wore nothing but the ever-present horn-rimmed glasses and a European-style black bikini that did little to enhance the slender frame it covered. 4 straight hours of diving had left Gunn exhausted, every bone, every muscle begging for relief. "Sorry, sir," Gunn mumbled softly. "Bad news, I'm afraid." "For God's sake, Rudy," Pitt asked, "what is it? Weren't you able to raise the plane and recover the pilot's body?" Gunn shrugged his thin shoulders. "Neither."
As bad as that? Pitt queried, voice and face deadly serious. Worse, Gunn replied grimly. Let's have it. For almost 30 seconds, Gunn remained silent. The others in the cabin could hear the faint creaking noises of the ship, rolling in the gentle swells of the Mediterranean, and see the tightening of Gunn's mouth. Believe me, we tried, Gunn said wearily. We used every underwater search trick in the book, but we couldn't locate the wreck. He gestured helplessly with his hands. It was gone, vanished, God knows where.